Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 8. Today is Sunday, July 10th, 2005. This is the podcast that gives the ground-level view of the life of a road warrior, coming to you from hotel rooms now around the world. Bit of a change for this podcast. I'm on the first day of my vacation, so the theme will shift a bit toward leisure travel. We're going to talk about the strengths and weaknesses of technologies for booking leisure travel. Comfort and brands, is the sort of mestizing of Starbucks around the world all that bad? And finally, serendipity, the things you discover when you're looking for something else. This week, coming to you today from the bathroom, or is it the WC, or the toilette, of the Novotel in downtown Geneva, Switzerland. I did try to record some of this in the lav of the American Airlines 767 on the way over, but the background noise just sort of overwhelmed Adobe Audition's noise reduction function. Hey, I'm sorry for the delay in getting this podcast out, but I'll tell you, it's been a tough week as I've tried to get as much as possible nailed down before heading over to Europe for this 2.5 week holiday. It sort of proves the old adage that you absolutely pay for your vacation, working twice as hard before you leave, and then again when you return to make up for the time off. For me, that means hitting the road. I did an out back to LA this week, leaving Tuesday morning and then returning Wednesday morning. I'll tell you, I gave up red eyes for Lent some years ago. Then Thursday was an out and back to Baltimore, and luckily I got out of Baltimore before the remnants of the hurricane. Is it Kathy? Have we already had that many named storms before Kathy swept through? I, however, did draw the line when I was asked back to LA for a Friday morning meeting. I'll tell you, with the flight out to Brussels Saturday afternoon, my family would have rightfully killed me. As it is, or as it was, I was in meetings and on conference calls all day Friday from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., save for the sort of 45 minutes around lunchtime I carved out to get my hair cut. Hey, as I mentioned in the last Travel Commons podcast, we're in Europe on holiday. Yesterday, today, pick your time, we flew from Chicago to Geneva, taking American Airlines from Chicago to Brussels, and then SN Brussels Air, I guess it's whatever they renamed Sabena, took that into Geneva, about an hour and 15-minute flight. The flight over from Chicago to Geneva was a full 8.5 hours. That was a long haul. You know, I'll tell you, my wife was really excited about the 2-hour layover in Brussels. She's got a soft spot for Belgian chocolates, actually complimented by my soft spot for Belgian beers, though I didn't have much faith in satisfying my want at 8:30 on a Sunday morning. However, none of it came to pass. Transiting through Brussels, we had to pass through security again after we got off the American flight, and the line was huge. I'll tell you, it's been a long time since I've been through Brussels, so I can't tell you how much of this is normal versus how much is the security tightening coming out of this week's London transit bombings. The treatment at the screening point, though, was a bit different than in the U.S. I did need to remove my outer garment, my sports coat, but I didn't need to pull out my PC or my video camera out of my carry-on. None of us had to take off our shoes. Even my daughter, who's got a pair of these sort of chunky pumps with big, thick soles, and she was the only one of us who got, and I would say rightly, called out by the TSA screener at O'Hare. She was the only one who had to take her shoes off, and like I said, rightly so. She sailed through in Brussels. And actually, I was surprised when I set off the metal detector here in Brussels. I dumped everything out of everything out of my pockets and into the bin with my jacket. You know, however, it wasn't a big deal. The security guy lightly patted down the sides of my torso and just let me continue on. Regular Travel Commons listeners will know that I rant a bit on TSA's overzealousness. But on the other hand, I'll tell you, this one felt just a little bit too lax. I would not have objected if the security guide waved me over to a secondary screening, though I don't think they had a secondary screening. I didn't see any there. So there's a fine balance on this. I think TSA in the U.S., a lot of the airports, actually O'Hare accepted. I think O'Hare is fine. A lot of the other airports go over the top. Denver being a porch case there. But in Brussels, I think they were a little too far the other side, a little too lax. Anyhow, the rest of our itinerary, trying to say that three times fast, tomorrow we grab a car and drive from Geneva to Courchevel, France, in the French Alps, to see a couple of legs of the Tour de France. I'll tell you, we're pretty stoked about that. We've been glued to the coverage on the Outdoor Living Network cable channel. And then also I've been picking up the recaps on ESPN.com. I think they do a great job. And then we head back, come back here to Geneva to catch an EasyJet flight to Budapest, Hungary. I'll tell you, somebody's got to explain how connecting these two cities, Geneva and Budapest, by a direct flight makes sense. Well, anyhow, it saved me an overnight train trip through Zurich, so I'm okay with it, but I would love to hear the story around it. Well, anyhow, once we get over to Hungary, we bounce between Budapest and Alsóörs on Lake Balaton. My wife's family is from Hungary, so yeah, we'll be vacationing like locals. This is my fourth trip to Hungary. I've been in 89, 92, and the last time was 99, and we've always had fun. Hey, a couple of quick follow-up items. First, thanks to the folks who've left comments on the Travel Commons website, www.travelcommons.com. There's some great comments under the show notes for Travel Commons number 7. Some good comments and suggestions, especially the one about schmoozing the bartender at the Rubicon in San Francisco. I've been to that restaurant, and it's a great place. I left replies to everybody underneath their initial comments. I'd also like to point out that on the left-hand column of the Travel Commons website, I'd like to point everybody to the worst airport poll. We've had about 10 responses so far, and I guess I'm surprised at how equally distributed the votes are. I expected O'Hare to catch the majority of votes, given that we're now in the thunderstorm season. But it seems to be a pretty even race among O'Hare, LAX, Denver, and Newark. So if you get a chance, stop by, vote, and then maybe even leave a comment. First topic for today's podcast is my recent experiences with travel technology as I was booking hotels on this vacation. Getting a hotel in Courchevel in the French Alps, it's just outside of Albertville, to see the Tour de France was a challenge in a number of ways. First of all, it's really a winter resort. You're in the Alps; it's really a ski resort. That's what it's geared to. Indeed, you know, Albertville was sort of the headquarters for the Winter Olympics and one of the Winter Olympics in the early 90s. And so many of the hotels close up for the summer. And I'll tell you, even the ones that are open are small and family-owned. So, you know, how do you know the good ones from the holes? the first technology trick that I used was to send email out to all my extended joke mailing list. And let's face it, we've all got the joke mailing list. We get a joke, we forward it around to all our friends. Well, my joke mailing list has a number of Europeans, a number of U.S. expats, and a number of friends of mine, Americans with pretty broad vacation experience. So I sent that out. I got a few apologies, and actually I got a couple of suggestions, not so much on places to stay, but pointers to websites, which then led to the next technology, internet search. And here I ran a couple of paths. The obvious, Google. You know, that's everybody's stop. And my wife actually ran down the Google searches. Whereas I tried some of the newer stuff, Mobisimo and Kayak, two of the new travel meta search sites that I discussed in Travel Commons podcast number 2, and then also TripAdvisor. You know, Google turned up, obviously, a number of sites. That's what they're there for. But I'll tell you, TripAdvisor, with its traveler ratings and the comments that come through it, was actually very, very useful. It actually pointed us to the Novotel here in Geneva, which, being able to put my kids, my wife and I, four of us into one room at a very reasonable price, we're paying 210 francs. Swiss francs for the night. Been very happy with this hotel, and that was absolutely straight through recommendation from TripAdvisor, people who posted on TripAdvisor. My wife spent a good number of nights then working her way through the list of hotels that in Courchevel that she pulled out of a number of the sites that she found on Google, which then led to the next technology, which was internet booking. And I'll tell you, for these hotels, that was a bit dodgy. You know, unlike the real-time booking engines that you're going to get on the big brand websites like Marriott and Hyatt and Hilton, you know, and so on, Starwood and so on and so forth, where they've got, you know, they're able to look into the room inventory. I'll tell you, the booking services connected to these small hotels seemed more like sort of sending an electronic query to someone who's then going to pick up the phone and try and place an order with the hotel. The room inventories absolutely weren't up to date, and the turnaround on it was at least 24 hours, and some of them we were seeing 48 and 72 hours. So I'll tell you, time was running out. We had no room in Courchevel a week before our planned arrival. And so I decided I got to go straight to the source, and I got to start dialing for rooms. And so my wife took her list, and she rank ordered it 1 through, I think it was about 14. And I just started at the top and started placing calls early morning Chicago time. But still here, I leveraged some internet technology. Rather than using the phone and paying through the nose, I used Skype, it's actually a peer-to-peer voice over IP service. And I combined my Skype account with the Skype Out service that, for a fee, lets you dial regular phone numbers from your Skype client. It's incredibly cheap. I rang at least a dozen hotels in France and had lengthy conversations with probably half of them, and ended up spending less than $1 for the whole thing. The quality was great. No one ever had a problem understanding me, and I had no problem understanding them. I had Skype loaded on my laptop. I had a headset plugged into the mic and speaker jacks, and it worked like a charm. And in the end, that's what found our room. Talking with one hotel manager who apologized for being full, I asked her for a recommendation, and she pointed me to the hotel Altaport. I'm not sure if I'm getting that pronounced right, in Maribel, which is just down around the valley from Courchevel. They seemed like very pleasant people. However, I'll have to let you know if this personal touch resulted in a great hotel. Actually, in a later podcast, I'm going to find that out. I'm going to find that out tomorrow afternoon, and then I'll let you know in the next podcast. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast: comfort in brands. As I mentioned in the first topic, the search for my hotel in Courchevel could have been a lot easier if there were some name brand hotels there. You know, taking the safe way out, booking a brand, may have saved me from two nights in a hole, and I still don't know whether or not that's going to be my situation. Or it could have caused me to miss out on a small jewel of a place with great people, and I hope that's what I find at the Hotel Altaport in Maribel tomorrow afternoon. You know, it seems that the value of the brand to the traveler, and more importantly, the quality audit systems that are now part of most franchise brand arrangements, the value of all that to the traveler really is safety. Reducing the variance, reducing the risk of a bad experience, which seems to have more value than the complementary risk of missing out on a potential great experience. People seem to want to avoid the downside risk more than they are concerned about opening themselves up to unexpected surprises on the upside. You know, last month, I found myself in the middle of the Southwest Michigan farmlands looking for a hotel for the night. The day had absolutely run way over late for me, and you know, quite honestly, I just didn't feel like fighting the traffic back to Chicago. The only room I could find was the Golden Eagle Motel in Niles, Michigan. Now, Niles also had a Holiday Inn, and sight unseen, I would have paid more to stay there. At 11:30 p.m., all I wanted was a safe, clean place to sleep. There would have been little time to enjoy any unexpected charm. I drove up to the Golden Eagle, and I absolutely cringed. The squat cinder block building and the night clerk visible from the street through the pane glass window, I'll tell you, it reminded me of the Bates Hotel, but without the charm. I drove over to the Holiday Inn, which was actually two doors down, just to convince myself that they weren't lying about being sold out. You know, driving through a full parking lot and seeing a sign at the front saying, "Congratulations, graduates," that convinced me they weren't lying. So I took the room at the Golden Eagle, even after being told that the air conditioning was broken. For me, there are some things in travel that are worth the risk. Restaurants, theater, concerts, and there's some things that aren't. You know, and perhaps it's about that cost of failure. If a restaurant is bad, I leave. If a play is incomprehensible, I walk out. You know, though people may decry the Starbucksization, if that's a word, if I can make up that word, that Starbucks are spreading across many of our cities. I'll tell you, the fact is, I like their coffee better than most places. It's strong, and most of the times, actually all the times, it's fresh. You know, I find it better. I find that the coffee is better, either the espresso or the drip. I find it's better than most independent coffee houses. However, you know, if I'm not in a rush, if I've got a chance to, if I have the time to give an independent coffee house a try, I will. Because you know what? I'm only on a buck and a half. And so what's the downside risk of that? You know, if I can limit the damage both to my time and my wallet, I'm in control. A bad hotel can impact your entire stay, though, especially in the high seasons like summer, and given the hotel loads that we're seeing now, you know, where you make that choice 2 weeks beforehand, you're stuck because there's no other rooms available. You know, a bad rental car can strand you in the middle of an unsafe situation, be it in a lousy part of town or in the middle of a desert. The Golden Eagle didn't ruin my evening. It wasn't filthy and the bed wasn't broken. However, I'll tell you, I didn't spend much time in the bathroom. I just didn't much care for the look of that shower curtain. Today's last topic on the Travel Commons podcast, the crown jewel of travel is what I'd like to call it, serendipity. Finding that unexpected prize, that upside risk when you're looking for something else. Now I'll tell you, my wife will tell you that I am very strict about body clock adjustments on the first day in Europe. Indeed, if Hitler and Nazi references weren't being so overused and debased in U.S. congressional debates nowadays, I think she might reach that far. I dragged the family around Geneva today in an effort to keep them awake. Fresh air, sunlight, exercise, these are the things that research says will help reset circadian rhythms when you do overseas travel. So we were walking toward the Tourist Information Center that's on an island in the Rhone River, right near the mouth of the Rhone as it intersects into Lake Geneva. And unfortunately, it turned out to be closed today. But as we were crossing the little bridge to get over there, I spotted some sort of gathering on the other bank. And so we took a walk over, you know, a slight detour before heading over to the other information center that we knew was open. And walking up, we saw tents and metal grandstands and a TV trailer. So we asked a woman with a badge, always a good thing, asked a woman with a badge what was going on. It was the Beach Chutebol World Championships. Well, of course, that explained everything. Luckily, the woman saw our blank stares and gave us a bit of an explanation. Chutebol, she said, is a bit like handball. You pass the ball and shoot it into what looks like an inclined, very tightly strung trampoline, and put my hand against one, and it was really tight. And then the defending team tries to catch it before it hits the ground. I guess it was invented by some physician here in Geneva in 1970, and the handout she gave me said the rules seeks to eliminate unfair plays and useless aggressiveness, which is probably why it hasn't caught on in the U.S. Well, beach chutebol, as you can guess, is played in a sand pit, and I'll tell you, it has a bit of the same vibe as beach volleyball. That's got to be what they're going after. You got the music, you've got, you know, people in swimsuits. Admission is free, the woman said. If you've got 5 minutes, why not play? It's the consolation round. Switzerland is playing the second Taiwanese team for third place. Well, why not? We thought the sun is shining. It's a nice day. It'll keep us awake. And so, and on top of it, she gave us a whole bag full of sponsor swag and just showed us in. I'll tell you, we had a great time. We were seated up in the Taiwanese section, and they had gobs of people there supporting our team. I'll tell you, looking around, there were three, you know, probably 2 to 3 story high metal grandstands surrounding the sand pit. There easily had to be 1,000 people in this place. And so, you know, so we're sitting with the Taiwanese. One of the sponsors, Coco, and I have no idea what they are, but I do know that the brand color is orange. They had some sort of a hip-hop dance team of young white Swiss girls. And a bit unexplainedly, one guy. And they did dance routines during the break in the action, and then were passing out all sorts of tchotchkes to the fans. Floral lays, little orange clappers, which led to a whole lot of audience participation. So the beach chukball world championship did indeed have sort of an international flavor. In addition to the Swiss and Taiwanese, there were teams from Austria, Canada, Hungary, in their first appearance here, France, Brazil, and Belgium. And on the women's side, Canada faced the Taiwanese, who are obviously a real powered chukball, for the championship. Now, I'll tell you, for those of you who are interested and want to drill down on this, the official website is www.chukball.org. Now, chukball is spelled T-C-H-O-U-K-B-A-L-L.org. I'll put the URL in the show notes on www.travelcommons.com. Well, I'll tell you what we thought was going to be a waste of a day, you know, just trying to recover from our flights and get time adjusted. But we discovered a whole new sport and had some good laughs watching Swiss hip-hoppers. The only danger, of course, is that here on the first day, this is going to end up being the highlight of our vacation. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 8, the leisure edition, the vacation edition. I'm not sure when the next podcast is going to show up. I'll try and get one done from Hungary. I hope all the new subscribers have enjoyed it, and I hope everybody stays subscribed, either by hitting the subscribe button on iTunes or copying the feed from travelcommons.com and dropping it into your favorite podcatcher. I'm using both iPodder.org. I've stayed with iPodder, the iPodder Lemon client, and a couple of podcasts subscribed through iTunes also, so I'm kind of straddling the fence on this one. Anyhow, I appreciate any comments directly to comments@travelcommons.com or at the travelcommons.com website. Again, that's TravelCommons.com. Thanks for everybody who's left comments there to date. I really appreciate it. Or I also check the comment board at podcastalley.com. And thanks for everybody who's voted for the Travel Commons podcast so far in July. Well, listen, take care, and the next time you'll hear from me will probably be from Hungary. Until then.